Good morning. Today's daf and erev in the Yud Tes. We are on Yud Ches Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud, about 5 lines from the bottom. We're starting with the words Amar Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar. Half of today's daf is going to be finishing off from the Agadah of yesterday, specifically Rav Yirmiyah ben Abba. Yesterday, we were introduced with the Amara, and I'm sorry, although we're spending nearly two days discussing statements made by Rav Yirmiyah ben Abba. Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar. So I have nothing in terms of biography. I don't know who he is and who he was the Talmud of, and I have no information regarding the Samora. My best guess is that he's an Amora Veret Yisrael. He goes with the title of Rebbe, and so assumptions are is that anyone with the title of Rebbe is an Amora Veret Yisrael. Everyone here knows the basic rules, that if your title is Rav, so that means to say that you didn't get Smicha. You know enough. In other words, you got some sort of title, but you didn't get smicha, so therefore you go with the title of Rav. Anyone outside of Eretz Yisrael, so goes with the title of Rav. On the other hand, if you're in Eretz Yisrael and you were a Mosavach in Eretz Yisrael, so you're given the title of Rebbe. And so the best thing I could tell you is that he was an Amor in Eretz Yisrael, but after that, though, it's unclear who he is. Why we're spending so much time with statements of Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar? So it had to do with yesterday's daf. Yesterday, we started the second parak of Masechta Erevin, and we were introduced to the idea of Pasei Beiros, that if you are traveling to Eretz Yisrael, if you're traveling to Yerushalayim, and you have to stop along the way for Shabbos, and you want to make a makeshift enclosure, you want to make a makeshift for Shusha Yachid, that's going to go around a board, it's going to go around a pit, so that you have a water source for Shabbos. So the water source itself is a Rosh Hashanah Yachid. The road in which you're traveling is a Rosh Hashanah Rabim. You are going to be stuck in terms of drawing water on Shabbos. So what you do is you make a perimeter around the well. And by doing so, now you have basically made an enclosure of Rosh Hashanah Yachid. And so now you're good to go. You're going to make a full enclosure around. That's going to be it's very time consuming, and you're traveling. You don't have time to do so. So the Chachamim gave a Kula. And that is that you could put 4 brackets in the 4 corners. And now you're going to be having this makeshift for Shusha Yachid, which will work. And what we discussed briefly yesterday, and we're going to go back to today, is the exact parameters of this Shusha Yachid that's being made. We're going to come back to that later. In the meantime, however, so the brackets themselves are called diyumdin. It's a strange word, diyumdin. And it's a contraction of 2 words, as we learned in yesterday. And this was taught to us by Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar. So he says that the word diyumdim is a contraction of the words diyu amudim, 2 brackets. Each one of the brackets is working on a 90-degree angle. And so it is a contraction of that word duo from the Latin word duo. So duo amudim. Good. So that's the definition, the translation of the word diyumdim, as explained by Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar. And then, starting yesterday, so the Gemara tells us, and here's some other things that were taught by Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar. So, for example, yesterday we spoke about the construction of Adam HaRishon as he was first created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So was he created as basically Siamese twins? In other words, Adam and Chava were created together, and they were fused together, and then what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did is he separated them, which is clearly the position of Yirmiyah ben Elazar. No, Adam was created by himself, and he had an appendage, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu cut off the appendage and transformed that into Chava. So constructed that into Chava. That was the other option. Good, that took up a good part of yesterday. And then we went through 5 other statements made by Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar. When today is over, when the daf is over. So we're going to learn a total of 9 statements made by Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar. Most of them have to do with Agadata, some have to do with Ashkafa. But outside of that, there are no halachic statements that were made by Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar. This is all in the world of Agadata and Hashkafa. The first one, as we just went over, was the construction of Adam and Chava. Second one we went over yesterday was the 130 years that Adam Rishon finds himself to be in excommunication. After Chet HaRishon, after eating from the Eitz Hadas, so he was in Nidui for 130 years. And very interesting Gemara in terms of what he was doing during that Nidui time and what he was producing during that Nidui time. So that goes back to yesterday's daf. The third thing that we mentioned is that when you praise somebody, you should do Mitzah Shivcho Shel Adam Bifanav and Kulo Shel Bifanav, some of the praise in front of him, all the praise when you're not with him. The fourth comment by Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar is that the Mizonosav are a person's livelihood should come directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if it's a little bitter, and that would be better than going through some sort of intermediary. Learning Torah at night, That is number five. Per se, any house that has Torah being learned at night, so is not going to be subject to any kind of destruction. Number six of Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Elazar is that from the time that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so we are left with only the two-letter name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we do not utter the four-letter name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when there was a Beis HaMikdash and when there was Birchas Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash. So four letters of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is said by the Kohanim during Birchas Kohanim. However, post-destruction, so it's only two letters in the Gemara for the Pasuk called Neshama Ta'alal Ka. That is where we get up to yesterday. So we got through six of the memras of Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Elazar. And so that means that we're going to have another three more to go. We're going to do seven, eight, and nine this morning. Number seven, on the bottom of Yeches Amud Beis, five lines from the bottom. Sorry. Three lines from the bottom. Okay, number seven. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Elazar Niskala Bavel Niskala Shechineha. When Bavel was destroyed, so the neighboring communities were also cursed and destroyed. And it's Kal Shomron, it's Baruch Shecheinah. But when the Shomron was destroyed, Shomron over here meaning a reference to Eretz Yisrael, so the neighboring cities actually benefited. Now the Gemara quotes Pesukim to this idea. It's Kal Bavel, it's Kal Shecheinah. How do I know that? Dechsev it's Tamtia LaMarash Kiput VaAgbe Mayim. So I made it basically to be plowed over. And Kiput Agbe Mayim, Rashi says these are dangerous animals. Right, Rashi Marash Kippur, Shem Visham Holchos Hachayos Raos Hamaz Umazikus Mekamos Hasmuchim La the Oil Rashi Oil Shcheino. So Rashi says that basically these animals go out, these dangerous animals go out, and so it was bad for everybody when Bavel was destroyed. However, Niskal Hashem and Nisbarchu Shcheina, that's not true in Eretz Yisrael. So when Eretz Yisrael was destroyed, so the neighboring communities were blessed. The pasuk says Dichsiv Vesamti Shamrom La Ayasadel Lem Ate Karim. So vineyards for the neighboring communities, even after Eretz Yisrael was destroyed, Shomron was destroyed. Okay, that is number seven. Number eight, as we are now on the topic of the Testament Aleph. I'm Rav Yirmiyahu ben Elazar bar Reish, Shelo Kimitas HaKadosh Baruch Hu Midas Basav Adam. So the contrast, the Gemara does this very often, in which we compare and contrast ourselves to how we generally behave and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu behaves. And that is Midas Basav Adam, is Chayav Adam, Hariga Lamachus. So let's say a person is chayav hariga. A person needs to be executed. So matil lo chika l'soch piv. So you put a muzzle in the person's mouth. Kadesh lo yikal al es hamelech. So that he doesn't curse the king. Meaning he doesn't feel like he deserves to be executed. And basically you have to muzzle him. However, midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Adam is chayav hariga l'malkom. A person is chayav nisa. Shosek, he's quiet. Shenemar lecha dumiyati la. The Pasuk in Tehillim says that for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the greatest praise is silence. Now, the simple pshat in the pasuk is that we're not really in a position where we could praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's nothing that we could say that really highlights what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. We don't understand. We don't fully understand. Our understanding is extraordinarily limited. So the best way we could praise Him is dumya, by being quiet. That's a simple pshat. But the Gemara now understands that part of the praise that we give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that when we are chayv anything, when we have any kind of liability, when we have any kind of difficulty, so what we have to understand is that we deserved it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us din v'cheshbon. And so we don't complain, meaning we understand this is part and parcel of the package. V'lo od elo shemeshabeach. And not only that, meaning not only do we accept it quietly, but we even praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? The Gemara in Brachos, which the Gemara over here doesn't quote, but kishem shemavarchim ala tov, kach mevarchim ala ra. We give bracha for whatever befalls us. It all comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we're Meshabeach Shenema, the Pasuk says Tehillah, that we have to praise the Kadosh Baruch Hu whenever we get any kind of, whatever comes our way. So, V'lo od elo shodam lo ki'ilu makriv karbon. Not only that, it's like offering a karbon. Shenema ar l'cha yishlam neder. So back to that parak in Tehillim. So we're giving a neder. In other words, a neder in the most classic sense is that I make a pledge to bring a karbon to the Beis HaMikdash and I actually bring the karbon. So a person who befalls any kind of hardships, and he's quiet, and he praises the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so it's like bringing a carbon. And Hainu Dam Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, and this conforms, this fits with the position of Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, my dechsiv, Ovrei be'emek habacha me'en yishisuhu, sorry, me'ayin yishisuhu, gambra chos yatem orer. So the pasuk in Tehillim, another parak in Tehillim, parak pei dalad. So the person is going through the valley of tears and he's drawing from some well and gam brachos yate moreh. And the Gemara now is going to be breaking up the pasuk, explaining. So over elabani adam shover imal rasan shakar shbaruchu. So the opening word in this pasuk is talking about those people who are vayanim, they sin. And emet shemamikim lam gehenim. And as a result of that, they're going to now be chayv a certain amount of gehenim. Habacha shabochim umorinin demos kemayin shal shisim. And they're crying. And they're crying like the mayan shal shisim, mayan shal shisim. So that's in reference to the Beis HaMikdash, the Mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash, where there are two holes in the southwest corner where the Nesachim are poured down. One hole is for the Yayin, the other one is for the Mayim on Sukkos. Anyway, so a person is crying tears. Gam brachos ya'ateh moreh. Shemazdigin aleim asadim. And what does that mean that at the end of the Pasuk in Tehillim, that they're blessing Kadosh Baruch Hu? So ya'ateh moreh. By the way, moreh is a reference to the rains. So yoreh umalkosh. So the early rains. Anyway, so gam brachos ya'ateh moreh. So you're giving brachos to Kadosh Baruch Hu. What does that mean? Shemazdigin aleim asadim. So when they receive these calamities, these hardships, so they say, we deserve it. Kadosh Baruch Hu was right. We were wrong. And so what the person says when he receives these punishments is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you are absolutely right. You judge correctly. A person is either acquitted, a person is liable. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everything you did is correct. And Gehenim is created for the Rishayim, and Gan Eden is created for the Tzadikim. And Schar Va'onish, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is done emes la'amito. It was absolutely correct justice. So, okay, so what we have over here is in Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Elazar's eighth limud, going back to yesterday's daf, is that l'chadum yati'ila, the idea that there's tzidka din, that we recognize the fact that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is the authority, he's the judge, and everything he does is emes la'amito. It's absolutely correct. So the Gemara says, Yini, the Gemara says, now I'm bothered just by, I take that statement that we just learned by Rabbi Yirmiyahu ben Elazar coupled with Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. And on the other hand, however, it does not fit in with another statement that was made by Reish Lakish. Ini the Gemara says, V'amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish Rasham afilu apischo shel Gehenem einam chozer b'tshuva. So when you have a Rasha and he's at the entrance of Gehenem, so he's not chozer b'tshuva. How do I know the Shenemer? V'yesu v'ru b'v'gran Hashem ha'poshim bi. Pasuk in Yeshayahu describes the people that are sinning. Ha poshim be the poshim, in terms of a verb, in terms of it being conjugated, it means that they are currently sinning. She pashu lo nemar doesn't say that they sinned in the past. Ela ha poshim, it means that they are sinning. She poshim ohochim lolam, and they continuously sin, and their attitude is that way, and even as they enter the entrance of Gehenna. So what we have over here is a discrepancy. So a discrepancy between Rav Yehoshua ben Levi and Rav Yirmiyahu ben Elazar on one side, and Reish Lakish on the other side, and really, it's a discrepancy in psukim. On one side, on one pasuk, you have l'chadu miyatila, coupled with the pasuk of over be'emekabacham ha'in yeshisu gam brachos yateh moreh. Those psukim indicate how there is tzidka din that's done. In other words, even when a person is suffering, and even when a person is being punished, he recognizes it from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And on the other hand, you have the pasuk in Yeshayahu, which is pegrein Hashem ha'poshim bi, that they are sinning against me, meaning even as they enter Ganim. The Gemara's distinction is the differences to be drawn between those who are from Yisrael and those who are Ovdei Kochavim. Ovdei Kochavim, so they don't recant. And they remain in their position that they were right, and they are not going to be Matzik Es Hadin. On the other hand, Poshe Yisrael, so ultimately they're going to be Matzik Hadin. Hachinam Mimistabadim, King Kashi, the Reish Lakish, the Reish Lakish. Now we know this is the right distinction, because otherwise we would have an inherent stira within Reish Lakish. Dam Reish Lakish Poshe Yisrael Ein Or Gehenim Shaletzes Behem, that when you have a sinner of Yisrael, so the Or Gehenim is not going to burn them, meaning it won't permanently affect them. Again, to the best of our understanding. Kavachomer Mimizbech HaZahav, and we can generate this point based on a logical argument from the Mizbech, from the Golden Mizbech. Ma Mizbech HaZahav, the two Mizbechs that were operating in the Beis HaMikdash, the outer Mizbech, the Mizbech HaChitzon, and the Mizbech HaZahav, the golden Mizbech that was in, which they burned Ketores on the Mizbech on a daily basis. Ma Mizbech HaZahav, she'en alav elak ovi dinar Zahav, amad kama shanim v'lo shalta ba'or. So when you have the Mizbech HaZahav, where it's plated in gold, it's not gold top to bottom, it's just simply plated in gold, the layer of the plating is a coin's worth of gold, and meanwhile it's used, and you have the Ketores being burnt on it on a daily basis, and it goes unaffected by it. One of the nisim that took place in the Beis Hamikdash is that it was totally unaffected by the fire. So poshi sosha malay mitzvos kerimon shenemer kapela harimon rakasech. So as far as Poshe Yisrael is concerned, meaning even the sinners, they have mitzvahs. They're full of mitzvahs. Full of mitzvahs like the Rimon. The Gemara cites this analogy time and again, this idea that just like the Rimon is full of its seeds, so too every single Jew has got mitzvahs, even the empty ones. So we're darshaning over here the word rakasech from the word rake, which means empty. Even the most empty of the Jewish people have mitzvahs. Sha'afilu reikadim shabach melei mitzvahs kerimon. Filled with mitzvahs like the Rimon. So al achas kama v'chama. So how much more so? If the mizbech itself is going to be unaffected by the fires, so for sure a neshama of a Yisrael is going to be unaffected by the Orshel Gehenna. Now the simple pshat in the Gemara is that he's still going to go to Gehenna and he will be he'll be burned with the fire, but he won't be affected. In other words, it won't permanently scar him. And again, to the best of our understanding of how this Gemara operates, al hadichziv. So the Gemara says, okay, now we get to go back to the pasuk in Tehillim that we quoted towards the top of the Amud. So so as far as those people who are crying when they go to Gehenna, so in other words, okay, that's Poshe Yisrael, and they are going to go to Gehenna, but they're going to go to Gehenna for a little bit of time. So the Mechayve Ushaita Begehenna, and Avram Avinu takes them out of Gehenna. Bar Misol Sheba Abas Ove Kochavim. The Gemara notes an exception over here, and that is that if a Jewish man has relations with a non-Jewish woman, Demashcha Arla So, and he's Moshech Arla, he tries to pull back his Arla over his Aver. Now, does the Gemara literally mean that he physically did that, or does that mean just simply by marrying a non-Jewish woman, by being with a non-Jewish woman, it's Ki'ilu he did that? Not totally clear from the Gemara over here, but anyway. And he's unrecognizable as a Jew. So for such an individual, so Avram Avinu is not going to pull him out, but for everybody else, Avram Avinu is going to pull him out of Gehenna. Okay, so before we get to Rav Kahana's question, so what we've now done is constructed a picture in which, so Poshe Yisrael, Poshe of the Kochavim, they're all going to go to Gehenna, but with a notable difference, Poshe Yisrael is Matzdik Hadin. Poshe of the Kochavim are not Matzdik HaSadin. Poshe Yisrael are going to go there, but for a little bit of time, and be going to be salvaged by Avram Avinu, and Poshe of the Kochavim are not going to be salvaged. Okay, that's the basic picture that we constructed over, so far, a good part of the first Amud of today's Daf. With one more additional point over here, a question by Rav Kahana. Now, all of this was arrived, this entire conclusion was constructed based on the Pasuk in the Tehillim, and the difficult reading of that pasuk. Sorry, we're going back to the pasuk in Yeshayahu. Pasuk in Yeshayahu, v'yatzu v'ro b'figre anashim ha'poshim bi. So we looked at the verb and we looked at the way it's conjugated, and it means that they're sinning against me. Not that they sinned in the past, but even as they are being introduced into Gehenna, so they're still sinning. That's the way we understood the pasuk. Rav Kahana says, I'll tell you what, you don't really have to explain the pasuk that way. Maskefla Rav Kahana ha'shad amar da'poshim da'pashu v'azlei. So you're insistent that the word haposhim means that they continuously sin. So now the pasuk describing HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking us out of Mitzrayim uses verbs hamotzi and hama'ale. And you're going to tell me now that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking us out of Mitzrayim. It's not true. He took us out. And hama'ale, he brings us up. What do you mean he brings us up? He brought us up. Ela de'asik ve'apik hachanami de'pashehu. So even though in Lashon HaKodesh, in verbs in the Chumash, so even though the verb is normally translated as present tense, but you see contextually, we just gave two examples, Hamotzi and Hamale. We see contextually, it clearly refers to the past. And so that means to say that in reading Lashon HaKodesh, obviously there are general rules in terms of a way a verb is conjugated will indicate whether it's talking about past versus present versus future. However, they are not absolute, and you have to look at context in terms of helping you out. And so the two examples of Hamotzi Ma'aleh contextually, even though conjugated in the present tense, clearly is talking about past tense. So what they're going to say, we're going to say the same thing in that pasuk in Yeshayahu. V'ra'u v'figre anashim ha'poshim bi, even though conjugated present tense, but we'll understand it to mean past tense. Hachinami de'pashehu. Once you give that kind of interpretation, the pasuk in Yeshayahu, So then, really, our entire chiluk kind of falls apart, and there is no distinction to be made. In other words, everybody's matzik as adin. And okay, and Rav Kahana now is upsetting our entire binyan that we just built? Not necessarily. Meaning it could very well be that the Gemara is, in fact, giving over a Mesorah in terms of a distinction to be made between Poshe Yisrael and Poshe Ovdei Kochavim. It just happens to be that Rav Kahana says that the proof over here is not an absolute proof, and he talks about how sometimes a verb in Lashon HaKodesh is conjugated one way, but to be understood a different way. Okay, anyway. We are finally up to number 9. This is our 9th and final limud of Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar. And so let's begin. I'm Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar. We are more than halfway down on the amud on Yates Amud Aleph. After the lines start getting wide, it's another 7-8 lines down from there. So Shosha Psachim Yesh Legehenim, three entrances to Gehenim. So Echa B'Midbar, Echa B'Yam, Echa B'Yushalayim. So one out in the desert, one in the ocean, and one in Yushalayim. B'Midbar Dichsiv, and we're going to say Psukim that would indicate these various entrances. One, V'Yardu Heim V'Chol Asher Lehem Chaim Sha'ola. So Korach and all of his followers, so they went down, Chaim Sha'ola, they went down to Gehenim. So B'Yam Dichsiv, the Pasuk says, Mibetim Sha'ol Shavati, Shem'ata Koli. So Yonah, when he was thrown into the ocean, so he went into an entrance to Gehenim, and yes, he was swallowed by the dog, but as far as the way he described it as a Sheol, which is a reference to Gehenim. And Yerushalayim Dichsiv, no mashem asher or lo b'tzion, v'tanur lo b'Yerushalayim. So the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, which the Gemara now interprets, v'tan debei Rav Yishmael, asher or lo b'tzion, this fire in Tzion ze Gehenim. And that is a reference to actual Gehenim. And tanur lo b'Yerushalayim, zu pischa shel Gehenim. And the oven in Yerushalayim is a reference to the entrance of Gehenim. From the description that was just given the Gemara, so it sounds like Gehenim is something a little bit less than metaphysical. Meaning, if you would have asked me, I would have said that Gehenim occurs to the neshama. It's not something that affects the guf per se. And so it's something which is totally metaphysical. Meanwhile, from the Gemara over here describing the entrances and geographic location, so it sounds like it's somewhere in between physical and metaphysical. And it could over here that the Gemara is to be understood by Derech HaDrush. It's hard to say. In other words, the Gemara over here is giving actual geographic locations. Admittedly, it's not to a specific location, but still they're geographical. Okay, obviously, all this we understand on a certain level, but that's it. In other words, our understanding of all this is extraordinarily limited, but certainly to walk away from the Gemara with the ideas of Schar Va'onesh, which is Ikarei Emuna, that's basic. So that obviously is something to walk away with, but in terms of identifying where, why is it important for us to know where these locations are, these are obviously questions which I'm not equipped to answer. Vesuleika, the Gemara says, now consider the following. In other words, so far we've identified three entrances, and the Gemara says, what about V'Hamar Rav Miryon, Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, V'Amar La Tana Rabba Bar Miryon, B'Devei Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shtei Tamaros Yesh Began, I'm sorry, B'Gei Ben Hinom. So there are two date trees in the valley of Hinnom. Ve'ole Hashem Yibinem, you're going to see smoke going right between these trees. Ve'zui Shishanin Yitzine Harbarzo Ksheros. And what you're going to find over there is that these are the Tzine Harbarzo that is the first Mishnah of the third parak of Sukkah, describing some lulavim that are slightly odd in its shape, odd in its character, and one of them is the Tzine Harbarzo. And the Gemara over there describes exactly what these lulavim look like, why they do not present themselves like quote-unquote normal lulavim. But meanwhile, however, where do I find these lulavim? So where you're going to find them is where in the place we just identified, in the valley of Ben Hinnom. Vizui Pischa Shel Gehenim, and that's one of the entrances of Gehenim. So we have a tradition now that between these two palm trees is the entrance of Gehenim. And that would now be number 4. And we said that there are only 3. So Dilma Hainu Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a stira. It happens to be that the Valley of Ben Hinnom is right outside the Old City. And it could very well be that that's the one making reference to when describing Yerushalayim. Amar Yeshua ben Levi. Zayin Shemus Yesh LeGehenim. So there are 7 names to Gehenim. And if you look throughout Pesukim and Tanakh, so you're going to see Gehenim being described with 7 different names, Elohein, and they are 1 Sheol, 2 Avadon, 3 Be'er Shachas, 4 Bor Sheon, 5 Tita Yavan, 6 Samavis, 7 It's Eretz HaTachtes. The Gemara is now going to say Psukim. Shol Dechsim Yibetun Shol Shavati Shamati Koliz. That Pasuk in Yonah that we just cited. Number two is Avadon Dechsim HaYisupar Bekever Chasacham Nuaska Ba'Avadon. The Pasuk in Tehillim also gives a description in even when a person is in Avadon. The Gemara's understanding is that that's a reference to Gehenna. Number three, Be'er Shachas Dechsim Kilos Azov Nashi L'Sha'ol L'Sitein Chasidech. So you see that the word shachas over here is clearly connected to this area of Gehenna. Number four, bor sha'on, utita yavan. Number four and five, I should say. Dichsiv. Another pasuk in Tehillim. Vayaleini mi bor sha'on mitita yavan. Kadosh Baruch Hu took me up from these places. Both of them a reference to Gehenna. Number six, salmavis dichsiv, yoshrei choshech v'salmavis. A person is in darkness, he's in salmavis. That's Gehenna. And number seven, eretz hatachtis gemarahu. So for the seventh name of Gehenna, we don't have a pasuk. It's just Gemara. It's just a tradition that we have. And hopefully you were wondering, and that is, of the seven names of Gehenna, you know what Gehenna does not go by? What name is not ascribed to Gehenna? And ironically, it is Gehenna. Meaning Gehenna is not one of the seven names of Gehenna. Now that obviously is a strange sentence, but that's the correct conclusion. We just identified the seven names, and Gehenna not being one of them. So the Gemara explains that Gehenna over here is not a name, but rather it's just simply a description. Gei she'amuka b'Gehenam she'akol yored al iske hinam, or chinam. So it is a place where it is deep, and a person is going to go there because of chinam. Rashi understands that to mean arayus. Meaning, obviously, for many averus, there's going to be schar v'onish, or I should say better. For every avera, there's going to be schar v'onish. But apparently Arayus is something where there is a special place in Gehenna for such an individual. Vaika Tipateh Dichsiv. Now the Gemara says, I think there's another name to Gehenna. In other words, I think Tipateh, which literally means to seduce, but I think that's a name for Gehenna. Dichsiv, the Pasuk says in Yishayahu, Ki Aruch Me'ez Mol Tipateh. And so in the context, it sounds like a place that a person is going to be put for purposes of punishment. So the Gemara says, no. So the Gemara says, again, that's not a name, that's simply a description. Anyone who is seduced by Yetzer Hara, so that's where he's going to go. It's not a name, it's just simply an adjective. Gan Eden, now as far as Gan Eden is concerned, I'm Reish Lakish, in Be'eretz Yisrael, who? Beishan Pischal. Where's the entrance of Gan Eden? So first of all, the Gemara makes a really interesting assumption, and that is that it's one entrance. We don't know where it is, but it's one entrance. And again, I'll just reiterate the point, I'll do so quickly, and that, again, Gan Eden could be viewed as a metaphysical location, or at least one would have thought of that. One would have thought that it has to do with the neshama. But nevertheless, again, the Gemara is operating with an assumption that, no, it's not strictly metaphysical. There's something physical about it, and we're talking about an entrance to it. And again, unless you want to say that the Gemara is not to be understood, b'derech hadrush, which is certainly possible, but the simple reading of the Gemara over here is that there is some sort of entrance to it. It is not strictly metaphysical. Okay. And the Gemara says, so I'm Reish Lakish, in Be'eretz Yisrael, who? Beishan Pischal. So if it's in Eretz Yisrael, so you're going to find it by Beishan. Beishan, so Rashi over here, he doesn't cite the Gemara Megillah, but as per the Gemara Megillah, talking about the fruit of Beishan, so it is the sweetest fruit of all of Eretz Yisrael. And so the Gemara says that if there is an entrance in Eretz Yisrael to Gan Eden, so that's where you're going to find it. V'im Baravia. So let's say it's in Arabia. So the Gemara is acknowledging that it doesn't know where it is, but here are good candidates. If it's in Arabia, so base Garam Pischal. Okay, sorry, I do not know where that is. V'im Bein Hana'arosu, Damascus Pischal. Now, if it's between the rivers. Now, I would have said that the Gemara over here is referring to the Tigris and Euphrates, but Bavel's coming up in just a moment. So it's probably not a reference to the Tigris and Euphrates, probably a reference to an area somewhere in Syria, and the reason why I'm suggesting that is because it's called Damascus, which sounds a lot like Damascus. But that's a lot of speculation, and again, another candidate of where the entrance is. And Bavel, now what if the entrance is in Bavel? So Abaye Mishtabech Beperi Deme'avar Yemina. So Abaye, so he would praise the fruit of Avar Yemina. So Avar Yemina, Rashi actually says, so Avrahanar Pras Bedromo. Southern Euphrates. Okay, it's called to the right. So why? So as far as directions are concerned, So orientation basically was towards the east. Whenever we're given a map, so north is where our orientation starts by pointing north. Okay, for reasons where this rumor that the world is round, anyway, you understand. So our orientation is always to the north. The Gemara's orientation always starts by pointing to the east. So fine. So if you're headed east and now you're going to make a right-hand turn, so that's why you go to the south. Okay. So that's why the description over here of to the right and that's to the south. So that's why Rashi describes it as the south. Anyway, Rava Mishabech Beper D'Apanya, and Rava says that the fruit of Apanya is amazing, which would indicate that the entrance, if in bubble, is over there. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the Agarata, and that was the ninth and final comment by Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar. And there you have it. Between yesterday's daf and today's daf, so we had at least a blot, right? More, a little bit more. Starting in the middle of Yuches Amud Aleph, finishes up now in the bottom of Yuches Amud Aleph, and over a blot of Gemara, going over various statements made by Rav Yirmiyah ben Elazar, nine in total. Mostly Agarata, a little bit of Hashkafa, and we continue now in the Gemara. We're on the bottom of Yuches Amud Aleph, and we are continuing in discussing our Diyumad. And we talked now about the brackets that are put in the four corners. And so first, a technical point in that, we're going to have a team of oxen going through the entrance, a second team of oxen coming out of the entrance, and a description in the Mishnah in terms of how these oxen are configured. And the Mishnah says, Ubenem Kemelo Shtei, right? The Gemara over here just cites the heading of the Mishnah. If you go back to the Mishnah, you go back to yesterday's daf, and you will see a description of these oxen. Uveneihem, in other words, we're talking about the area between the brackets. Uveneihem Kemelo Shtei Revako Shoshal Shosh Bakar. Div Rav Meir. So according to Rav Meir, so it's going to be three oxen going in, three oxen coming out. According to Rav Yehuda, four oxen going in, four oxen going out. We're going to give the linear measurement in a moment. In the meantime, however, Pshita came into Tanel de Koshros, de Kishuros, Havu Anayadinan, de Lo Have Mutaros. So the Mishnah's language is verbose, and you know, anytime that's the case, the Gemara assumes that the Mishnah is not wasting a single word, and so why would the Mishnah say that they are tied up and they cannot be untied? That seems to be redundant. Explains the Gemara. So Maudatem Kishuros Kein Kishuros, Havu Mamishlo, Kamash Malan, Velo Mutaros. So I would have thought kshiros just simply means that when they go in, they have to be like they're tied, but not actually tied. So lo mutaros tells me that no, they have to actually be tied up. Achas nichnasas v'achas yotzas. So one coming in, one coming out. Tana ravka nichnasas v'ravka yotzas. So here in the Braisa, it's pretty much what we explained in the Mishnah, maybe just a little bit more descriptive, in that one is going in and one's coming out. I guess it means that we have to make a little bit more room. If you now have to create room for two-way traffic, so it's going to be just a little bit wider. Okay. The sense that you get is not, it's not an absolute linear measurement, although in just a moment we're going to say it is. But in other words, you need room for the animals to go in and out. Okay. Tana Rabbana. Kama Rosha Veruba Shalpara Shteyamos. Okay. So now we're going to be doing linear measurements. And so here we're going to be doing math. It's not higher math. It's addition, a little multiplication. So Kama Rosha Veruba Shalpara Shteyamos. So as far as the, when you're looking at the animal from head to tail, so it's two amos in length. Vekama Ovit Shalpara, now in the terms of the width of the animal, of our cow. So Amma Vishne Shlishi Amma. So it's going to be an Amma and two-thirds of an Amma. Okay, and now, Shehin Ke'esar Divrei Rav Meir. So how does it come out now? So according to Rav Meir, so you're going to take six of them. You're lining them up side by side along its wide side. So that's 6 times 1 and 2 thirds, so that equals 10. Now the language, as we now on the top of your testament base, the language is ke'eser. You know, it's like 10. The Gemara is going to ask the question, what do you mean it's like 10? It is 10. So the Gemara is going to ask that question, we're going to respond to that. And Rav Yehuda omer kishlosh esrei ama ucha arba esrei ama. And Rav Yehuda says, it's like 13, it's like 14. Okay, so ke'eser, now according to Rav Yehuda, what's the actual number? So the actual number is 13 and a third, meaning there are eight oxen, and they are side by side along its wide side. So that's 8 times 1 and 2 thirds. So that's 13 and a third. Okay. So it's like 13, it's like 14. That's the language of the Braisa. So Gemara is going to explain now. Ki eser havyan. So first the Shita Rav Meir, where he says it's like 10. And the Gemara's question is, what do you mean it's like 10? It is 10. And so Mishum Debai Lemis, they say, Fabishloshasrei, Kishloshasrei Tfei Havyan. So the Gemara says, well, in the end of the Braisa, when we go over the Shir Rav Yehuda, and we describe it as like 13. What do you mean it's like 13? It's more than 13. Mishum Debai Lemis, Karbasrei, Karbasrei, Halo Havya. So, and meanwhile, he says it's like 14. It's not like 14, it's less than 14. So Amar Papa, Yeseru Shloshasrei, Veinu Magis, Arbasrei. Exactly what you would have figured. Meaning, yeah, it's like 13 a little bit more. It's like 14 a little bit less. It's somewhere between 13 and 14. Right? We know that, generally speaking, when the Gemara gives numbers, the Gemara loves to give whole numbers and prefer not to give fractions. Obviously, the Gemara is not against fractions, and often is the time the Gemara gives fractions, but sometimes numbers are just simply articulated in whole numbers. So over here, instead of saying 13 and a third, which, by the way, the Gemara is totally in its right to do so, but over here, it's somewhere between 13 and 14. Closer to 13, obviously, but okay. Amra Papa. Okay, and now what we're going to do is the following, a little bit more math for this morning. And that is, so now we know that according to Rav Meir, if the gap between our brackets is anything greater than 10 amos, so that's no good. According to Rav Yehuda, if the gap between the brackets is anything greater than 13 and a third, that's no good. Now what we're going to do is we're going to be working with these numbers. We're going to be starting with the actual pit itself. Amra Papa Bebor Shmona. So let's say the pit now is 8 amos. So over here, if the pit is 8 amos, so now what? So now the pit is 8 amos, so how far distant are the brackets going to be one from the other? And so if you think about it, well, you don't really have to. I mean, Rashi does the math for us. So if it is 8 amos, so that means to say that the distance between the brackets, now I say the brackets, by the way, I really mean from one end to the other end, is going to be a total of 12. How do we get to the number 12? So because, as we know, Rashi over here, Afilu Rav Meir, Rashi, second Rashi in the Amud. Afilu Rav Meir lo be'inam pshutim, dechi marchi kidei rosh avruba nahainu, shtei amos achol ruach. Look, consider, says Rashi, that what we're going to have over here is that the animals have to go into the enclosure. Now, we already established that the length of the animal is 2 amos, so we get to use that number that we learned earlier. And so nimsa hachalal shebein beza mechitza shtei mesrei ama. So now the actual enclosure itself is 12 amas. 8 of the actual pit, or the well, and another 2 on each side, so that gets us to 12. Now, that gets us to 12. Now remember, what is going to be the gap between the brackets? That's going to be 10. Because remember what we learned yesterday. The brackets themselves extend an ama in each direction. So if it's 12 ama enclosure, and the brackets are going one arm in each direction, so now the gap between the brackets is 10. Good. So and 10, we said, is good according to Rav Meir. According to everybody, it's good. So that's exactly Rav Papa's point. And let's go back and reread. So, Amar Rav Papa, Bebor Shmona, Kul Amal Apliga, Delabinim Shutim. So if the pit itself is 8, and the configuration like we just described, so then everyone's in agreement. I don't have to add anything more. Now, if the pit itself is 12, so again, what we're going to do now is we're going to be adding 2 on this side, 2 on the other side for the actual cow to enter into the enclosure. So now it's 12 plus another 4, that's 16. And so now everybody says we're going to have to add. Because if it's 16, so knock off an ama for the diumid. And so now we're having a 14 ama gap. 14 ama gap is too wide for everybody, both for Amir and Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, so under those circumstances, now we're going to have to add more. And we'll talk about exactly what we're going to be doing to add more. But anyway, keep leaking Mishmona Shtemesrei. So if the pit itself is anywhere between 8 to 12, that's the Machlokas. Rav Meir be'inam pshutim, Rav Yehuda lo be'inam pshutim. So according to Rav Meir now, the gap is too wide, and you're going to have to throw in more posts, whereas according to Rav Yehuda, you won't have to. Rav Papa, Maika, Mashmal, and Tanina. So the Gemara says, now, everything that was just said by Rav Papa, so we knew it already. Meaning, once we learned the Braisa, that started on the bottom of the previous Amud, so all this information is now obvious. And the Gemara wants to know, Rav Papa did not seem to introduce a new point over here. So the Gemara says, Rav Papa Braisa lo shmiyaleh v'kamash malanke Braisa. Rav Papa didn't know of the Braisa. And so therefore, what Rav Papa was basically doing is he was constructing these configurations with the numbers without knowledge of the Braisa. Now, parenthetically, by the way, that's a little bit strange because if you look at the Braisa, who comes to explain the Braisa? So Rav Papa comes to explain the Braisa. Meaning when we were struggling with the language of the Braisa, it's ki eser, It's kishlosh esrei. It's ki'arba esrei. So who explained what that meant? Rav Papa. So what do you mean Rav Papa didn't know the Braisa? So you have to say the pshat is that originally Rav Papa didn't know the Braisa, and Rav Papa therefore arrived at these numbers on his own without knowledge of the Braisa, and then he had a Braisa that supported exactly his pshat. You're going to have to say that as a pshat. Anyway, we continue in the Gemara. Ayach Yoser Batel HaChitzas Chatzer Shiyavsha Siman, a mnemonic to help us remember. As we are now going to go through five questions that were posed from Abaye to Rabbah, and the mnemonic is there to help us to commit to memory these five questions. And here we are now at question number one, first wide line on Yutes Amud Beis. We start. So, and all these questions are going to be from Abaye to Rabbah, and question number one, Harich B'diyumnin, Kishir Pshutim L'Rameir Mahu. So the, let's say I extended the Diyumdim. So according to Rameir, what would be the halacha? And that means to say like as follows, meaning, according to Rameir, the gap between the brackets can not be greater than 10 amos. And so let's say the gap is greater. And so instead of putting in posts in the center in order to make the gap smaller, so what we do is we just simply extend the brackets in the corners. So according to Rameir, is that good? So Amalei Tenisua. Uvilvad Shirba Bipasim. So, I think the Mishnah gives us a very clear answer to that question, says Rabbah, back to Abaye. And if you read the Mishnah carefully, it says that you're going to be marbe bipasin, which seems to indicate that we're extending the brackets. My lab de ma'arech b'diyumdim. Isn't that pshan the Mishnah? The Gemara says, no, that's not pshan the Mishnah, no. De ma'afish v'av b'pshutim. So the Gemara says, no. That what you're going to do is that if it's over a 10 amma gap, according to Rameir, you're going to be adding a post in the center of the gap. And so that now, on each side, it's going to be less than 10 amas. So, ha'chi hava v'ashiyarbe bepasim ad shiyarbe pasin mi ba'ilei. Well, if that's true, the language of the Mishnah then is imprecise. Because the Mishnah, instead of saying yarbe bepasin, it should say yarbe pasin, meaning add new posts. So, tini ad shiyarbe pasim. So the Gemara says, okay. So if you're bothered by that, so then read the Mishnah that way. And he's, I think, suggesting edit the Mishnah. Now, Igadami, now in a slightly different version of how this back and forth went, now his first response to the question is that according to Rameir, if your gap is greater than 10 amos, so don't extend to the brackets, but rather put a post in the center. Isn't that pshat in the Mishnah? Lo, demarik b'diyumdim. So and the answer is no. What the Mishnah, the way to understand the Mishnah is extend the brackets. And in fact, that reads a lot better in the Mishnah because the Mishnah actually says yarbe bipasim. Okay, so if the gap for a mayor is more than 10 amos, so is it preferable to extend the brackets in order to decrease the gap, or is it better to put in a post between them in order to decrease the gap? So the Gemara asks the question, two versions of what the answer is. We're up to question number two. Question number two, Baimini Abaim Rav Yosef Mishlosh Asrei Amal Ushlish Rav Yehuda Mahu. So now, same question, but now we're asking Rav Yehuda. So Pshutim Avid O B'diyumdim Ma'arich. So, again, are we going to extend the brackets according to Rav Yehuda, or are we going to be putting in posts in the center? So Amalei Tenisua. And he says, again, that I'm going to read a braisa, it's a tosefta over here, and we're going to darshan. Yeah, we're going to read it critically, and we'll see from the critical reading of the braisa what is preferable for Rav Yehuda. Before we start with the braisa, before we make a deek in the braisa, so it's interesting that clearly the Gemara over here, by asking Rabbah, what would be for a mayor, what would be for Rav Yehuda, the sense that you get over here is that whatever you say for one is not necessarily what you're going to say for the other as well. Meaning that by virtue of the fact that the gaps for Rameir and Rav Yehuda are going to be at different lengths, and Rav Yehuda allows for a gap that's larger than 10 amos, up to 13 and a third, so that would mean to suggest that they may be operating with different principles. And that's why, although we just went over this question for Rabbi Meir, it may not be the same question for Rav Yehuda. Okay, and by the way, the point that I just made, the last Tosfos on the Amud would seem to indicate that this is, in fact, the thinking behind the Gemara. Anyway, we start with the Tosefta over here. Kamehim mekuravim kedei rosha veruba shel parav. So this point we already saw yesterday, but we get to learn it now through the Braisa. How close can the brackets be to the well? Close enough, but still the animal is within the enclosure. Its head and the majority of the body are in the enclosure. And as we just learned this morning, the length of the animal is 2 amas. The kama meruchakim. So now, how far can the brackets be away from the well? Afilu korv, afilu korayim. So it can cover as expansive an area as you need, up to a kor, up to korayim. Kor is 30 sa'a. So a huge expanse of land. And again, by the way, with the obvious provision that the gaps now have to be, according to Rav Meir, less than 10 amos, according to Rav Yehuda, less than 13 a third. Now, Rav Yehuda omer beis asayim mutar yoser mi beis asayim aser. Now, Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that when I'm making an enclosure using the method of the yumdim, so it cannot exceed, the total area cannot exceed beis asayim, 5,000 square amos. Amr lo Rav Yehuda yeta moda bedir v'sorah v'muksa. And the Chachamim say to Rabbi Yehuda, I don't understand. You talk about all your classic enclosures, the backyard, the front yard. So they can be as large as you want. And over here, you're putting a cap. So Amar Lahem Zu Mechitza Ve'elu Pasin. And Rabbi Yehuda says, they're not comparable. When you're talking about a classic enclosure, V'chatzer, V'muksa, so you're talking about bona fide walls that go around. So there is no limit to how big you can make them. Over here, we're operating with a totally different type of enclosure, notably the brackets, the diyumdim. So for the diyumdim, it is an inferior wall. And so with an inferior wall, you can only enclose an area of up to 5,000 square amos. Okay. Adkan divrei habraisa. And now the Gemara is going to make its diyuk. Ve'im isa, zumechitza, v'zumechitza mibayle. Now let's consider that if for Rabbi Yehuda, what we're going to do now is we're going to extend the brackets. So isn't that now considered a mechitza? And what does it mean? Zeh bepasim zeh mechitza. No. If we're extending the bracket, so zumechitza v'zumechitza. So the Gemara says, okay, hachi kamer. The Gemara says, that doesn't bother me. That's not a diuk. So zu toros mechitza ala upirtsasa be'eser. Ve'elo toros pasin ala upirtsasa v'shlosh esrei ama v'shlish. And the Gemara says, no. When it comes to the brackets, even if we are extending the brackets, the way it's operating is not midin mechitza, it's midin pasin. Meaning, it is a different categoric enclosure. And even if we are extending the brackets, but I know it's a different type of enclosure. And how do I know it's a different type of enclosure? Because consider, even according to Rav Yehuda, in a standard chatzer, so how wide an entrance is allowed? Only 10 amos, that's it. But with the Pase Beiraos, so Rav Yehuda, in this now new category of enclosure, allows a gap up to 13 and a third. So you see that it operates in a different plane. It's a different category type of enclosure. And so even if what we're doing is we're extending the brackets, it still doesn't have shem mechitza. It's not categorically mechitza. It still operates categorically under this category of pase beiraos. Okay. And so over here, for Rav Yehuda, the question is, if the gap is larger than 13 and a third, what's preferable? To extend the brackets or to put a post in the center? Inconclusive. Third question of Abaye. Abaye mine Abaye mirava tal mislaket asar mitoch arba. Nida mishum diyuma ro'enu nida mishum diyuma. So a concept that's coming up numerous times in our Masechta, and that is that if the incline operates at a certain angle, the Gemara over here expresses it in terms of the hypotenuse. If within Arba Amos, the incline goes up 10 Tfachim, so under those circumstances, is that considered Diyumot or not? Now in other areas of Halacha, as we're going to see over the course of this Masechta, an incline that steep, forgive me. I didn't do the angle. Okay. I'm sure in other iterations of the daf, I figured out the angle. I didn't do so for this morning. But anyway, whatever the angle may be, if you have an angle that's steep, so and we're going to learn time and again throughout our Masechta, that is considered a wall. And so over here, is it going to be considered a wall vis-a-vis the diyumot? And basically, what the Gemara is asking over here is, look, this diyumot is exceptional. You're basically creating an enclosure using brackets. And the question now becomes, can I use other halachic concepts in order to get to these brackets? Or perhaps, since these brackets already is operating with a tremendous leniency, so we're not ready to move or to give in to using other halachic mechanisms to create these brackets. These brackets need to be real, absolute brackets. So Amalei Tenisua. So he says, I'll give you an answer, and really it's based on the following brice. So the brice, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Hayse sham even murabas veron kol she'ilu tichalek v'yeshba Amlakan, v'amlakan, nidam mishum diyumar, v'im la, v'inam nidam mishum diyumar. And so over here in this brisa, we're describing the following. It happens to be there's a square stone. And the square stone now is, each side of it is an amma. Perfect. Now, granted, we need a bracket, but what halacha allows us to do is basically ignore the interior of the stone and just look at the perpendicular exterior of the two sides, and they're going to serve as one of the corners of the brackets. So that is the shita of the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yishmael beno shel Rabbi Yochanan Broka Omer, Haisa Sham Evan Agula, Ron Kol She'ilu Techakek V'Techalek, V'yesh Ba'amlakan Ba'amlakan, Nidam Mishum Diyumar, V'imla V'inam Nidam Mishum Diyumar. The shita of Rabbi Yishmael is that actually you can even be more creative, and that is that let's say the stone is not square in shape, but let's say it's circular in shape. Nevertheless, there's enough stone material where if I were to square it, and if it had an amma going in each direction, so then it works as a diyumen. So, b'maika mefilgi, now what is at the issue of this machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shmuel, where the Tanakhama only allows this for a square stone, whereas according to Rabbi Shmuel, you could do it for a circular stone. So, mar savar chad roen amrinan, trey roen lo amrinan, mar savar afilu trey roen nami amrinan. So, over here, the machlokes is, how many roens are we going to say? How creative can we be in terms of the way we could look at something? According to the Tanakhama, it has to already start with a square shape. The idea that we're carving out the interior, okay. Again, not physically carving it out, but the halacha allows us to ignore it, okay. That kind of flexibility we allow. But according to the Tanakhama, if it's circular in shape, we're going to have to square it in our minds and then hollow out the interior, that's too much already. Whereas according to Rabbi Yishmael, no. We are allowed that kind of flexibility in the way we look at it. And as Rashi points out over here, the Gemara doesn't finish the sentence, but as Rashi points out over here, so the question of, when I have an incline that steep, so can I look at it as a diyumad? So Rashi says, according to Rabbi Yishmael, yes, because Rabbi Yishmael allows for that kind of creative looking, where we could look at it as if, and the as if is, according to Rabbi Yishmael, a much wider as if you will. Much more generous as if. Whereas according to the Tanakhama, no, you already have to already start off with a basic shape. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, the answer would seemingly be yes. And according to the Tanakhama, the answer would seemingly be no. That's the way Rashi presents the Gemara. Question number four of the Gemara. Of Abai Terav. Abai Mine Abai Merava. Chitza Sakanem Kana Pachos Mishlosha. Nido Mishum Diyumar Olav. So over here, I have our diyumad, but it's made up through the principle of lavud, a post followed by another post, followed by another post, and in the L shape, and these reeds are placed within three tachim of one another. So lavud now is going to be filling in the gap, and so now can I use that for my diyumad? And again, it basically comes out to be the same type of question in which I'm already working with a tremendous leniency. Can I use another halachic vehicle in order to create the diyumad, or does it have to be solid walls? So amalei tenisua. So here also, Rabbi now is going to answer based on a brisa, and that is hayisham ilan ugeder chitza sakanim nida mishum diyumad. So here the brisa talks about a tree, a fence, or chitza sakanim. Now it's not perfectly clear what chitza sakanim is, and so the back and forth over here is what is the definition of chitza sakanim? My love, kanakana pachos mishlosha. Chitza sakanim presumably is what we just got describing. A reed, next to it another reed, the gap between them is less than three tefachim, that's presumably what we're talking about. And that would seem to answer our question. To which the Gemara says, not necessarily. Lo, gudraisa, dikani. It's talking about trees that are tied on the bottom, reeds that are tied on the bottom, kind of fan out on the top. So, ihachi hainu ilan, the Gemara says, okay, that's not exciting. Because in the Braisa, there were three examples that were given that could be used as a diyumad, and ilan, a geder, and chitza sakanim. If chitza sakanim are basically something tied on the bottom and spreads out on the top, that's a tree. So the Gemara says, ve'elamai, kana kana pachos mishlosha, hainu geder. So the Gemara says, okay, kana kana pachos mishlosha is the same thing as geder. Elamai yislach lemeimer, trey gavne geder, hachanami, trey gavne ilan. So the Gemara says, okay, So what I'll simply say is that, look, it's either going to be synonymous with the geder, it's going to be synonymous with the ilan. Okay, so I'm telling you it's synonymous with the ilan. So it's an inconclusive proof from the braisa. Ikadami, now in a second version of the back and forth over here, Gudraisa Dekani Kami Baile. The question was the Gudraisa, was something that was tied on the bottom but spread out on the top. Can that be viewed as our Diyumat? Gudraisa Dekani Gudraisa Dekani Kami Baile, Gudraisa Dekani Mai. So that was the question I'm related to Nisua. And he says, okay, and now we're going to be using the Braisa. And Hayisham Gedro, Ilan Ochisa Sakanim Nidam Shum Diyumat. And so the Braisa says that I could use either the tree, the fence, or the chitzas akanim as my diyumat. Again, assuming that it has the proper proportions. So my love, gudraisa dekane. Now when it talks about chitzas akanim, it's presumably talking about this structure where I have the reeds tied on the bottom and it spreads out on top. So the Gemara says, lo, kana pachas mishlosha. And the Gemara says, not necessarily. It's that we're talking about reeds that are within three tfachim of one another using the principle of lavud. Ihachi hainu geder. So here the Gemara says, okay, but that's synonymous with geder. Ve'alamai gudraisa dekani hainu ilan. So then gudraisa dekani is the same thing as ilan. Elamai zach lememar trei gavni ilan hachanami trei gavni geder. So it's either going to be a redundancy with the tree, it's either going to be a redundancy with the fence. Basically what come out from the Gemara over here is that the chitzas akanim could really be interpreted one, two ways. And so therefore, it is not going to definitively prove. It will not definitively prove that if my diyumad is made up using the principle of love, that should work. We don't have definitive proof for that. Nor do we have definitive proof for the case where I tie the reeds on the bottom, but they spread it on top. Is that going to be good as my diyumad? We don't have definitive proof for that as well. Both those questions leave us open-ended. We are up to the fifth question that Abaye is posing from Rabbah. And we will start there tomorrow. Let's recap our daf today. First half of today's daf, Rav Yirmiya ben Elazar. Nine statements made in total. Six we went over yesterday. And number 7, 8, and 9 we went over this morning. Number 7 is the idea that when Babel was destroyed, so were its neighboring countries. Not true with Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is destroyed, and meanwhile the neighboring countries get receive a bracha. That's number 7. Number 8, Tzidek HaDin. Number 8 took us through a good part of the Amud Aleph. The idea that when Poshe Yisrael end up in Gehenim, they're Mastik Esadin. We have Pesukim supporting that. Lecha Dumiya Tehila. Lecha Yushalam Neder. The Ovrei Be'ema Kabacha. No, I'm sorry. That's the... Ovrei Be'ema Kabacha Me'an Yishisu Gam Brachos Yatem Oreh. Right? We have these Pesukim in Tehillim, all indicating that there's Tzidek HaDin that's done by Poshe Yisrael. What about the Pesuk in Yishayahu, which would seem to indicate otherwise, that there is no Tzedek Adin? That's by Poshe Ovde Kochavim. And finally, the ninth statement of Rabbi Yirmiya ben Elazar, three entrances to Gehenim, as opposed to the one entrance to Gan Eden. Identifying where the entrance to Gehenim is, where the entrance of Gan Eden is. Okay. And that was the first half of today's daf. That was Yates Amud Aleph. On the bottom of Yates Amud Aleph, we go back to the Diyumdim. First, we talk about the three oxen coming in, the three oxen coming out. They have to be tied, not untied. There's two-way traffic. One group is going in, the other one group is coming out. The actual numbers, as we turn to the top of the Amud Beis in terms of our review. So according to Rav Meir, it's three going in. Each ox is 1 2/3 amma wide, so it's 10 in total. According to Rav Yehuda, it's 4 times 2, that's 8. 8 times 1 2/3, that's 13 1/3. Those are the numbers that are given to us in the Braisa. By the way, note that in the Mishnah was not specific about the actual numbers. The Mishnah just spoke about the number of animals. It's only in today's daf, with the Braisa and with Rav Papa, do we give an actual linear measurement. Okay, so according to Rav Meir, 10 amas, according to Rav Yehuda, it's 13 1/3. In terms of the language of the Braisa, it was a little bit difficult. Rav Papa helped us understand the language of the Braisa. And then Rav Papa came out to numbers which look exactly like we learned in the Braisa. Didn't Rav Papa know the Braisa? And the Gemara's response is Rav Papa did not know the Braisa. And then for the remainder of today's daf, a series of questions that was posed from Abai to Rabbah. Question number one, according to Rav Meir, if the gap is larger than 10 amos, what's preferable? Extending the brackets on the side or putting a post in the center between the brackets? The Gemara left that question unresolved. Same question number two, according to Rav Yehuda, where the gap is allowable up to 13 1/3. If it exceeds 13 1/3, what's preferable? Same question for Rav Yehuda. And as we pointed out, the Gemara seems to indicate that Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir may categorically disagree, fundamentally disagree, in terms of how the pasuk berurahs operate. Question number three that was posed, and that is that if I have a steep incline in one of the quarters, can that be used as my diyumdin? Again, assuming that it's got the proper dimensions and I'm in each direction and 10 tefachim high. So Gemara asks this question. The Gemara leaves this question off as a machlokus in terms of how creative we can be when looking at the diyumud, right? The machlokus between the Tanakhama and Shimon Gamliel regarding a square stone where the Tanakhama says that could be viewed as my diyumud, even though I'm going to have to not physically, but at least mentally carve out the interior. Whereas according to Rabbi Shmuel, I could do that even with a circular stone. So Rabbi Shmuel allows for more creativity when looking at something. So over here by the mound that on the incline, so Rabbi Shmuel would allow for that kind of creativity. And question number four, can I use the principle of Lavud to create my diumid walls in the brackets? Or alternatively, can I use reeds that are tied on the bottom but are flaying out, spreading out in the top? Can that be used in my diumid? Both of these questions at least seem to be presented in the Braisa, but the Gemara acknowledges the Braisa is not necessarily proof for either position. Ad Kanda takes us to the end. Mirza Shem will continue tomorrow.